rising sea levels, extreme weather patterns, extinctions of species. Our planet needs protecting. I'm Adam Vaughan, the environment editor for The Times, and this is Planet Hope from The Times, in partnership with Rolex and its Perpetual Planet Initiative. In this podcast, we hear from leading experts from around the world who are committed to finding solutions. These explorers, scientists, entrepreneurs, and citizens are committed to a common goal: to protect our home, Earth. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend. Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt. So throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Hello, I'm Matt Chorley, and this is Politics Without the Boring Bits. This week, bring you some of the best stuff that you might have missed this year. Now, very few people in Westminster have had as many lunches as the Sunday Times' chief political commentator, Tim Shipman. So, I sat down with Tim for three courses with drinks at a lovely steak restaurant near our office to find out how to get the scoops over the soups.
If we get through six questions with that reference to Boris Johnson, I will buy a very expensive dinner.
That's because we're the party of working people. And what does it say about him and his party that they won't do the same?
Winner, winner, Chorley dinner.
There we go. Yeah, well, I'm delighted, actually. It's time we had dinner.
It's time we had dinner, and I feel, yes.
Hello. We've got a table for two, but for Matt Chorley, 1:30.
Yes, Cindy. Lovely.
You lead the way. I think a booth is better. Let's take a booth.
Yeah.
Perfect, thank you.
Sparkle
still. I'm happy with that.
Still,
thank you. Right, we've got the menu. Are we doing wine or food first? Where is the
wine? You get something on the go, don't you?
Yeah, I think we should. We want to start with a drink.
I think if you had a politician, you'd loosen their tongue a little.
How often now do you get a politician who might start with a livener, an aperitif?
I think it depends when you're doing it. If it's lunch, almost never these days. Most people are, you could say dull, or you could say professional, and don't believe in drinking at lunchtime. When I started out in the lobby in 2001, I think most people drank most of the time. Almost nobody drinks at lunchtime now, and there are even some journalists that don't as well, I'm told. If it's a dinner, and you've specifically booked a dinner with, say, a cabinet minister, they'll often arrive late, usually, because they've had a terribly busy and important day. Running the country, and they quite often do want to let their hair down a little bit, so you're more likely to be able to entice them into a libation. But the days of Sunday journalists particularly used to have lengthy lunches on a Tuesday and a Wednesday, and there was such a thing in those days as a three-bottler.
What? Between two people?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Now, I can't remember the last time I had a three-bottler.
I remember, I'm going to do my Ken Clark story this early. I was at the Independent on Sunday, and I was really hungover for some reason. Maybe because I'd had a three bottler with someone else the night before. And I thought, lunch with Ken Clark, that's fine. And so I went to the restaurant, Rue, very posh restaurant just off Parliament Square. It's shut, isn't it?
It has shut, down,
But it was very expensive.
COVID,
And Ken Clark was late, and I got a call from his office saying he was insisted on walking because he didn't want anyone to know where he was, so he didn't have a car. So
obviously picked one of the most prominent restaurants 100 yards from the House of Commons.
And he turned up, and without even sitting down, I think, ordered gin and tonics for us both.
and I think we had a nice bottle of wine, and that we maybe even had something afterwards. I very agree with it was too, and I basically spent the whole time, because I was quite young at that point, spent the whole time thinking, I'm having lunch with Ken Clark. He didn't really tell me he had anything of a great interest. He sort of, he wouldn't, because the beauty of Ken is anything he thought, he'd already said in public many times over. He wasn't, there wasn't a huge amount he'd say off the record that he wasn't willing to say on the record.
But there's an element, particularly when you're starting out, of sort of political tourism. It's nice to meet these people. I remember going to see Nigel Lawson, Michael Heseltine, who'd been these sort of giant figures in my youth, and just hearing the old stories was enough.
Yeah. Sorry, having water on it. Can we order some drinks, please? Yeah, thank you.
Can I get a Bloody Mary, then?
Bloody Mary, how spicy would you like?
Sort of medium.
Yeah. Just for the sake of... let's have a pink Gibson. That's vodka, gin and a pickled onion.
There we go.
Great. That sounds good.
Perfect. Just to ask, are there any allergies I should be aware of?
No, not at all. Yeah, thank you very much.
In terms of sharpness, the one that sticks in my mind is a serving member of the Shadow Cabinet who arrived before I did for, I think it was a 12 o'clock lunch. It was an early one. It was not like halfway through the afternoon. And I arrived to discover her halfway down what was very clearly a large gin and tonic. I've had quite a morning. She should probably remain nameless.
I think some people will think this is all a bit ostentatious, partly us having this lunch. Isn't that out of the ordinary for political journalists? But everyone else is worried about the cost of living, and we're troughing, and politicians are troughing. Why can politicians spare the time? Why should they spare the time? And why does it need to be done over lunch and not a cup of tea or in an office somewhere having a normal meeting like normal people?
Well, I would say increasingly it is. It's increasingly a coffee or pop into the department for half an hour. A lot of lunches get cancelled because business gets in the way, which is why if you want to have a really deep dive, you probably ought to go for a dinner. But, you know, politicians and journalists kind of coexist in the same space. We need their stories and they need our publicity. And doing it over lunch is a way of getting to know each other a bit better, maybe establishing some trust, swapping some stories that aren't necessarily kind of massively important to the future of the country, but help grease the wheels of, frankly, everybody likes to have a bit of a gossip. It's quite helpful to cabinet ministers to hear from journalists who've been around a bit about how things are playing, how things are landing. They don't always get told the truth by their own special advisors or by their own whips. You know, sometimes we can, it's a two-way process. You can be of some use to them, and, you know, by getting to know a politician and getting to hear them sort of in a more relaxed atmosphere, you kind of can develop the kind of relationship that has mutual benefits going forward. And, you know, some people treat lunch like they treat other things, like a press conference. Some journalists come in and start out, get a few contacts here, pick up one bit of salacious gossip and immediately trot out and tweet it and go to, you know, put it online. And others build relationships and try to sort of, build a long-term rapport with someone where you're more likely to get the goodies in due course. I've sort of always tried to do it the latter way, and I think most certainly journalists on Sunday papers would play the longer game.
Oh, well, our drinks have arrived. Look at that.
There we go.
Thank you very much.
I was sure about the pickled onions, but
cheers, Tim. Well, you've got celery and a tomato, and I've got a couple of pickled onions.
Yeah, the celery is
juicy
looking.
That's rather good.
Mm. Yeah, that's hit the spot.
Lovely.
But you and I arrived together. It was often in the olden days when people drank too much at lunch. I think a tendency for certain MPs to arrive early for their lunch. I remember Michael Fallon, the former Defence Secretary, used to lunch with David Ruffley. When they went hunted as a pack, you would sort of say 1 o'clock and you'd get there 10, 15 minutes early, knowing what they were like, and they'd already be sitting there. There'd already be a bottle of wine on the table and you were already paying for it. And
that's interesting.
Let's put it this way. They didn't respect the expenses limit.
That's interesting, two MPs lunching together. Because somebody's just grinding up some ice in the background. Lots of people won't know this, but it's quite normal for journalists to lunch together. So two journalists and one MP.
Yeah.
Well, for a long time I used to lunch with Chris Mason. Now Chris goes to the BBC. I was at Mail Online. He was at the BBC. So a minister would think, well, I've got... for an hour's lunch I can hit the BBC and Mail Online or the BBC and the Times.
Two for the price of one.
Two for the price of one. It's good. There would be some people who want to lunch with me and some people want to lunch with Chris, And so we'd sort of double up, and that worked quite well. But for two MPs just to be out troughing, presumably at that point as well, sort of backbench MPs.
They were
well.
Both backbenchers, and quite a lot of what they were good at was speculating about what might happen in the next reshuffle. And if you go back and look at sort of Google or LexisNexis, or the reshuffle stories written between about 2001 and about 2010, almost all of them included a promotion for Michael Fallon and or David Ruffin, which was the least you could do slightly, after they'd given you half a dozen other stories.
Slightly more successfully for Michael Fallon than
indeed.
David Ruffin.
Yeah, yes.
Pass me home. So let's have a look at the food. Starters. These days, when I've been out with politicians, they even try to skip starters.
I always check, do you have time for two?
Yeah.
The real connoisseurs will say, well, let's do a main and a pud.
Yeah.
But yes, a starter is, it's often a quick one-courser.
What are we doing today? Are we doing starters?
I will be led by you, Matthew.
I'm happy to do starters. This is what we're here for.
Let's do it, then.
Are we on food?
Yeah, we're good.
I think we're probably ready to order. Yeah. I'll have the crab on toast, please.
Crab to start?
Yeah.
Are you a starter?
I'll have the scallops, please.
What are you doing for me?
I decided I was going to have a steak without actually deciding which steak.
I will go ribeye, medium rare, with the eggs and the peppercorn, please.
Me? Oh, I mean, I'll go. If you've had the ribeye, I'll have the sirloin.
Shall I?
Yeah, please. Medium rare. I won't have the two fried eggs. Let's go béarnaise. Yeah, nice.
What are we doing
for sides? Sides is a good question. I'll have a spinach, please.
Cream spinach or spinach lemon agar?
Cream spinach, please.
Spinach.
And I will have some beef dripping fries.
Beef dripping fries.
Mash and gravy for me, please.
Perfect.
Thank you very much.
No worries.
So the choice of restaurant was mainly this was chosen because it's a nice steak restaurant not far from Times Radio Towers. But how do you go about choosing the restaurant?
Well, it depends what your guests want. Some of them are like, oh, there's a vote at 3 o'clock, we need to be in the House of Commons. So they might take you to the terrace or to the members' dining room or the strangers' dining room. Or there's a place called the Adjournment in Portcullis House, as you know, which is a bit more of a cantini type thing. As a Sunday hack and someone who is often doing interviews for books and that sort of thing, people quite often like to be off the reservation. And most people in Westminster are extremely lazy. So if you get much further than Trafalgar Square in one direction or Millbank Tower in the other, you're not going to run into sort of passing trade. Anything that involves jumping in a cab for 5 minutes is going to put off most people. So
and this is because what someone doesn't want, if they're a cabinet minister, your well-known face, key face around Westminster, you might say. So if a cabinet minister is seen with Tim Shipman on Wednesday, and in the big read in the Sunday Times of the weekend, a cabinet minister says Rishi Sunak is useless and he's got to go, there's at least half a chance that someone might have spotted him and put two and two together.
Correct. Yeah. I tend to find off-the-beaten-track places, and if you can find nice restaurants that sort of have a nice wine list that you might be able to cake someone out with, I'm in a member of a club as well, which occasionally I take people to, which up in Soho, that makes, you know, gets people out of town.
I remember, on the subject of restaurants, I remember once inviting James Wharton, as he then was, he's now Lord Wharton, of course.
Of course, they all are, aren't they?
He was a minister, must have been in the Cameron government, I think, and he'd invited him for lunch. His office sent me an email, I think, saying the minister needs to be near the house, so he thought he might like to go to Roo, which, as we've discussed, a very expensive restaurant just across Parliament Square. I mean, really, quite expensive. And not really middle-ranking, well, in fact, probably even junior minister of the department.
Yeah, that was cabinet minister's only
local
kind of
government.
Place.
Yeah.
That
very
was
much.
How I judged it.
Yeah. But I said, oh, not really. You know, that seems a bit much of the parliamentary undersecretary for dustbins, whatever he was. So went back and said, well, you know, actually, we could probably go somewhere else. I said, no, the minister's quite insistent that he'd like to go to Roo. And I said, well, if he needs to be near Parliament, I'm having to go to the adjournment, which is literally on the parliamentary estate. He couldn't be near a Parliament. No, the minister really would like to go to Roo. I'm just trying to think. We either ended up going to the adjournment, or we may not have had lunch at all. All he was trying to get was a lunch at Roo out of us.
Well, now he's a member of the House of Lords. You know, I'm sure someone will shout him a nice lunch.
Well, maybe our decision not to go there added to the financial woes of Roo, which is why it's not there anymore.
Maybe the case.
what turns out, a pickled onion soaked in gin and vodka.
It's the business, is it?
It's quite good.
I'll have a nibble at my tomato.
Thank you.
Now the food's arrived. Here we go. Thank you very much.
Right then. So I've got my crab on toast.
I've got my three scallops.
Three scallops.
A little splash of lemon juice.
Nice bit of lemon juice.
Is that a glass of white to go with the...
I think a glass of white with a fish. That sounds like a very good idea, yeah.
Particular preference, or should I just...
Why don't you pick for us? Yeah, as long as it... Thank you very much.
Very good.
So at what point, as we dig into the starters, at what point in your lunching do you start fishing for information?
The strategy of a lunch. Oh. Well, you would normally... I think... You would spend the first part of, you know, up the ordering and before anything arrives, small talking.
Yeah.
I would think, what's been going on, who's been doing what to who, all of that kind of thing. I used to have a sort of catch-all, tell me what's keeping you busy, or something like that. And that's then an opportunity for them to get off their chest, whatever it is they want to get off their chest. If they've got a story to offer, they might wheel it out at that point. Just to sort of, some politicians like to sort of, some of them used to actually say, you know, I will always sing for my supper, and they would, you know, produce a piece of paper with a policy announcement on it, or if they were being particularly naughty, some kind of write-around document that was nothing to do with their own department, that contained a policy they wanted to kill off, so they'd pass that to you in the hope that you would ridicule it in your newspaper. And then, and this is where it sort of helps to have two journalists working together. You then start to sort of cross-examine them a bit and try to make it look as casual as possible, tossing out sort of, well, we heard that this is happening, or are you aware that the Prime Minister is sort of working on this at the moment, or, you know, is that a good idea? What would be the pros and cons of that? Or have they got some long-term thinking that they're looking at that isn't quite ready to go, but that you might think about doing a story on in a few months' time? You can kind of go dibs, you know, that's mine, you know, can we have that when it's ready?
Yeah.
But the longer the meal goes on, and if you've got anything controversial to sort of ask, you know, you intend to leave it till the end. You wouldn't want to sour the meal.
Warm them up.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's important.
And if it's a dinner, you know, frankly, lubricate them a bit as well.
Well, yeah, I suppose there's an interesting question there about alcohol in politics. Yeah, this is delicious, by the way. My crab on toast, I love it. But the role of alcohol, he says, he finishes off his gin and vodka with a pickled onion. Clearly, there's a difference between a couple of glasses of wine just to warm things up a bit and get someone a bit more loose-lipped, and then we know all the other stories about what goes on with alcohol in politics. It's interesting what you've said about how, and I know this as well, there's much less alcohol in politics than there used to be. But I remember when I was first working in the lobby, I mean, half the lobby was sort of functioning or not functioning alcoholics.
Yeah.
They were in the bar at 11 o'clock in the morning, came back at lunchtime and fell off their chairs. We sort of thought it was funny at the time, but on reflection, they were just people whose working lives had ruined them.
Well, and there's one... I mean, I guess we can name him because he's written about it in his book. But Damien McBride, who was Gordon Brown's sort of main spin doctor, still on the scene now a little bit. But quite a brilliant man, frankly. One of the best spinners I've ever seen in action. And he was, by his own admission, a very high-functioning alcoholic for a large part of that period. He was drinking cans of beer at his desk in the morning and taking journalists out for considerable amounts of alcohol in later in the day.
Have you ever worried about that, about alcohol?
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away.
Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
No, I mean, I think I've never let it become an issue for me, I don't think. There's all sorts of stresses and strains in Parliament. I've seen it grab a lot of other people.
Thank you very much.
But actually, there's quite a sort of...
Thank you.
Slightly parsimonious attitude to everything these days. I'd say people, you know, I'm... let's be gentle, but say in my mid-40s, people who are 10, 15 years younger, they don't tend to see it in the same way.
I think that's probably also the same. He's terrible. They're literally having this conversation just as he's brought over
two
goblets of a white burgundy.
That'll do nicely.
Very nice with a fishy starter.
But you're right, it was seen as a sort of very funny thing back in the day. And there used to be a bit of a tradition where the journalists in the sort of daily parliamentary lobby would all sit and have lunch together, and it was sort of the done thing to have a drink then. And the sort of senior journalists, I mean, those days were figures like sort of Trevor Kavanagh and Michael White on The Guardian and David Hughes on The Mail. We're talking, you know, 20 odd years ago now. You could learn a lot by sitting and listening to those guys over a glass of wine.
Absolutely.
And then you'd all sort of get on with your working day. And to a degree, I think that sort of sense of camaraderie has been lost a little bit. Social media means everyone's kind of out for themselves and who can write the quickest or funniest tweet. And it's a bit of a dog-eat-dog world. But it was also a massively more hierarchical kind of place. And those kind of social functions, I think, reinforce that rather than breaking through it. So while I sat and learnt a lot, it was a long time before I felt confident enough to sort of break out on my own.
Yeah. Oh, Tim's spilt down himself already. Only the starter, and you've already spilt.
I know, a wee dribble from the scallop has made its way, has escaped.
We've put a shot of starters. They were absolutely delicious.
Now just savouring this very nice burgundy.
So the steaks have arrived. There's your eggs, Tim. Two fried eggs on a small plate.
Very good.
Mash and gravy. Cream spinach, lovely.
Homemade ketchup.
Thank you very much.
Peppercorn. And the Bernays.
Bernays.
I do have your fries coming.
My fries are coming. Thank you.
You were looking a little bit worried.
I know, I was starting to look at escalopes, that I was having a steak and spinach, and that was the full extent of it. I've got to say, your fried eggs look a little overdone, Tim.
Well, they look like...
A little bit crispy around the edges.
We'll give them a chance.
But with runny yolks.
As long as the yolks break when I...
He's putting his... for the benefit of listeners, he's putting the fried egg on top of his steak.
Yeah. There we go.
Let's get a bit of the Bernays on the go. So in your lunch with the minister, you've done the small talk, you've had the starters, you've got them warmed up with some light chit-chat. What's the meat and potatoes of it? What happens in the main course?
Well, I think that's where you sort of cut to the chase. Start asking them about stuff you've heard all around Whitehall, what's the government up to, what are they doing, what are they hearing anybody else is doing.
The chips have arrived. Excuse me, can we get some wine, please?
Of course, sir.
Do you want some red wine?
I'll have some red, yeah.
So a glass?
Yeah, just a glass.
Two glasses of red, please. Thank you. You can decide.
Some sort of Malbec or something
like that. Some sort of Malbec, yeah, that'd be lovely.
So the modern journalist, upon hearing something newsworthy, will start whacking it into a Google Doc or notes on their phone.
I sort of in think, front of the guest?
Yeah, some of them do, and I sort of think, it's fine if they're deliberately imparting information. But if they're saying something that's sort of a little bit offbeat, I mean, in the old days, one or other of us would look at, you'd sort of exchange eye contact with your lunch partner in a kind of, I think we've got a page lead there, or that's rather good, isn't it? Shall we push a bit harder on that? Or just occasionally they'd sort of say something where you thought an extra question might be best not to draw attention to the fact that you're quite so interested in it.
Yeah.
And one or other of you would sort of make your excuses and nip to the loo at that point and scribble, in the days before Google Docs, you would scribble into your notepad and hope that you could still read it later.
The red wine has just arrived, so that's excellent news all round.
Cheers.
Cheers.
That'll do nicely.
But this state, I'm not
contrast gonna... that with modern. I remember when I was doing some interviews for one of my books at the Chequers Summit. Jeremy Hunt was then the health secretary, and they were sort of stuck in some boring cabinet that had gone on for 4 hours about Brexit, and someone started passing around Haribo. And when it reached Hunt, who was health secretary and parsimonious about health and all the rest of it, he said, "I think I'll have those," and he basically confiscated them.
Now, I should ask you about the book. How is the book? When can people expect to see it in the shops? And how pleased will you be that your entire life being consumed by the ins and outs of Brexit for the last 7 years will be at an end?
Yes, I'm looking forward to the end of that life, I think it's fair to say. I've got a full draft. It's quite long at the moment. I'm just working in a few extra bits. And then I've got to cut. And I'm hoping it will be in the shops in November, so everybody can buy it for Christmas. And if they don't want to read it, they can use it as... it'll burn well on a log fire. It'll be a good, dense book. You know, you'll get 2 or 3 hours of very attractive...
How many words are we talking at the moment?
Oh, it's less than War and Peace, but not much less at the moment.
Put a figure on it.
Oh, War and Peace is 570,000 words.
Right.
So mine is a little bit less than that, but it needs to come down considerably.
I mean, you are essentially a victim of your own success. The first book, All Out War, which was such a huge hit, I think, because Brexit happened, Britain voted for Brexit, and lots of people who voted Leave or Remain weren't sure how that happened, and you wrote the first definitive account of how that happened. And now, 7 years on, You're still going at it.
Yeah, I mean, it's taken over... It changed politics, didn't it? It's taken over all our lives to some degree. It's now much more in the background, but I think everything that happened in that period shaped the kind of the relationships within the Conservative Party, which are still impacting on us now. It has, to some degree, shaped the economic situation we find ourselves in, though obviously... COVID and the war in Ukraine are kind of more immediate causes of that. And I think it's changed sort of how a lot of people see themselves and how they relate to each other. And so what started as a kind of political, you know, just say what happened in the room, and I'm trying to, in the conclusion at least, try and draw a few kind of conclusions about what it all meant, as well as what actually happened and how it happened and why... You know, a combination of ideology and people's ambitions all kind of came into this big pot and caused quite so much upheaval.
Because you've needed an end point. So the first one was clearly this is how Brexit happened. The second one was the bit in between, and it was what, just after the 2017 election?
Yeah, most of that book was about the election, and it took us up to the joint report where basically the backstop was created. And the third book begins with the backstop and with Dominic Grieve getting the right to have a meaningful vote. And those two things, frankly, shaped the rest of Theresa May's premiership for another 18 months. And
then you've got Theresa May, Boris Johnson, Liz Truss, Rishi Sunak, and all.
Yeah. It's all in there.
But actually, when we get to the end of 2023, that does feel like there's a full stop there, if the polls are to be believed, and Labour are about to win the next general election when it comes next year.
Yeah, and the interesting thing is Labour are... At times, significant players in this, but actually out of 60 odd chapters, I'd say there are probably four meaningful chapters on the Labour Party. And that shows you, you know, there was a time when there were the cross-party talks, there was a time when they moved towards a referendum, there was briefly the moment where people broke away from the Labour Party and tried to do something differently. But for the most part, they were viewing it like we were, and they look like they're going to take over. So, yeah, I mean, at the moment, the book ends with Boris Johnson resigning from Parliament, which looks like a good bookend. He's the main kind of character in all senses running through the trilogy. So,
yeah.
Yeah, but the number of endpoints I've had over the years. Firstly, it was Theresa May going, then it was the Brexit night, then it was Boris Johnson's Christmas Eve deal, then it was, you know, Boris going, then it was Truss going, then it was Rishi's deal, Windsor deal, and now Boris Johnson finally shuffling away.
So having watched it all from the sidelines, I'll let you eat your last bit of steak and egg. Having watched it all from the sidelines, have you ever thought about entering politics yourself?
No, not because I don't think it's a good thing. I think it's a noble calling, and I think what I try and do in these books is show that everybody, for the most part, has a good reason to be there, and they just sincerely believe different things. Where they differ is in having any ability to bring those things about. I've got a lot of time for people who go into politics. It's a thankless task. A lot of them get abused now in a way that they didn't 20 years ago. You know, back in the day, you could get yourself a safe seat, barely ever turn up to a constituency surgery, have quite a nice life, live in a big house, put some expenses in, maybe become the Parliamentary Undersecretary of State for paperclips, and retire with a knighthood and the good wishes of your friends and family. These days, you're going to spend a lot of the time dealing with pretty unpleasant people on social media, getting death threats, wondering which ones to take seriously, doing all that. So I've got loads of time for those people, but it's just not my skill set. They have to work out what to do and how to do it. I'm quite good at going, well, I wouldn't do it like that, but I'm less good at
after
saying,
the event.
Yeah.
There we are. Thank you very much. That was terrific. Wonderful. Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Well, that was really good.
That was really good.
Well,
I might nick a chip.
Have a chip. Have a little chip. There's a man approaching with a dessert menu.
Well, I mean, it'd be wrong not to.
Well, we're here. Thank you very much.
Where actually are the...
In the very first page.
Oh, right.
There we are.
Oh, there we go. Your classic sticky toffee. Oh, I'm not going to get past blueberry and lime cheesecake, I'm afraid.
The trouble with sticky toffee pudding is I would like it, but I will sleep for a week afterwards.
No, I know.
Chocolate en glaze, sticky toffee pudding, blueberry and lime cheesecake, peanut butter shortbread.
This can help if it's
peanut butter. Oh, very good. Thank you.
Strawberry and basil pavlova or elderflower panicot. What would you suggest?
Sticky toffee pudding.
Everybody always says that.
Is it really good?
Normally the best thing on the menu.
Sticky toffee connoisseur. This is the best thing
ever. Right, on your recommendation, I will have a sticky toffee pudding.
Sticky toffee.
Okay. I will have the blueberry and lime cheesecake, please.
Thank you. So, Tim, as we await dessert there.
A sense of anticipation building.
Yeah. What does politics look like? How long have you been in the lobby?
I have been in the lobby for 22 years.
That's much longer than me.
Started in 01.
No, I started in 2005.
I had 2 years out doing Obama and all that.
Oh, yeah.
My holiday. As
a watcher of politics over the last 20 years, what does British politics over the next 20 years look like?
That's a very interesting question, which I haven't thought about. What does politics look like over the next 20 years? I think it is a little bit more ideological than it was when I first started out, and it'd be interesting to see how the Labour Party manages that versus their sort of technocratic desire to get in. And you can see them running quite a lot of the Blair playbook at the moment, which is we control the spending, we look responsible, we might well match the Tory spending plans. But underneath it, a lot of the ideas are things that are a little bit more radical than
you would probably have seen Tony Blair attempt. And I think Brexit itself has been a kind of cultural dividing line for the nation. And I think it's not about Brexit, but it's what it signifies, how you voted. And I think that tells you a lot about where people are coming from. And I think it's made people more confident about striking ideological poses. Social media has added to the sort of intensity of people's political feelings, and I think it will require politicians who are more sophisticated and more deft at handling all that, have an interest in...
Hang on a minute, Tim. Our pudding has arrived.
Oh. Sticky duffy pudding.
Look at that. That's that, that looks as dense as I was expecting.
Oh, that's a nice amount of gun contact.
Thank you very much.
Well.
Thank you. My sticky duffy pudding has arrived, surrounded by a sauce which I'll describe as the colour of gravy.
Yeah, I mean, it's the sticky toffee.
Yeah,
yeah.
Now, just in case it is too rich,
yeah,
I've got the complete opposite as well for you to try.
You've bought me a second pudding.
I bought you a second
pudding. After all that talk of two dinners.
Surely two puddings.
There we are. So
there we go.
Yeah, raspberry panna cotta.
That's a raspberry panna cotta. Look at
that's
that.
That's two puddings.
Thank you very much.
That's going to become a thing. Isn't
yeah,
it?
He's ruined my reputation as a health fitness addict.
I was unaware of that reputation.
Oh, well, I'm very big on TikTok. Doing handstands on TikTok.
Rather.
Tim, we should finish with, how do you finish your lunch? How do you, when you've taken a senior cabinet minister out, what's the best way that a lunch can end?
The best way a lunch can end is if you sort of just clarify what you think you've learnt, and they will sort of say, yes, you can have that story, you can have that story, we'll give me 6 weeks on that one, and then sort of nail it all down, seal the deal in blood, as it were. Most people don't have pudding like we've had pudding, but I do remember one occasion where a still serving member of the cabinet arrived, ate a starter, a main, then a pudding, and then I nipped to the loo and came back to discover that she'd ordered cheese as well. And this minister did not even touch the cheese. She then demanded a doggy bag and took the cheese back to the House of Commons to eat in her office. And that is easily the most... The lunch in terms of, you know, girth of food that came closest to the one we've just had, I would say.
Well, I don't think I can beat the cabinet minister and her bag of cheese. So on that note, Tim Shipman, thank you for finally settling the debt, your bet, the Boris
the debt
Johnson.
Of the bet.
The debt of the bet that Boris Johnson would not be mentioned at PMQs. And thank you for talking me through the art of the political lunch. So I'm going to get stuck back into my sticky toffee pudding before it's all over. Tim Shipman, thank you very much for joining me for lunch.
Your very good health.
And obviously you can read Tim every week in the Sunday Times, and he joins me for PMQs Unpacked every Wednesday right here on Politics Without the Boring Bits. For now, from me, Matt Cholley, it's goodbye.
Hey, marketers. Want a matchmaker to set you up with your perfect audience? Well, look no further. Get intimate right away with host-read sponsorships with Acast. Use Acast's self-serve ad platform to search and partner up with a podcaster or two from our network of more than 100,000 shows. Have them sing your praises in their own words. And get their listeners ready to be wooed into loyal customers. It's the ultimate loving endorsement. Book host-read sponsorships with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.